June 11th, 2021. We're in Masechet Sanhedrin and Daf Lamed Zayin Amud Bet, and we're 18 lines from the top. The Gemara just finished telling us the story about Rabbi Shimon ben Shattach. Rabbi Shimon ben Shattach was a story which demonstrated for us the inability, the way that you're not allowed to go based on omid, based on evaluation, based on approximation in dinei nefashot. And the circumstance was he ran after an individual who in turn was running after another individual. As he approaches a horba, Rabbi Shimon ben Shattach, he sees that that person who was chasing after the other is holding a knife, and on that knife there's blood from the person who's lying in front of him, dead on the floor. And not only is that person dead on the floor in front of him, but he's still twitching. He's just died. Now, in such a circumstance, Rabbi Shimon ben Shattach is 99.9% certain as to what took place. This guy holding that knife is the murderer. However, he turns to this guy and says to him, listen, I'm not able to kill you. The Torah says that I need to be an Eid. An Eid needs to have actually seen or heard what took place. I didn't. I arrived a second or two too late. And as a result, I'm nonetheless appealing to Hayodea Machshavot, I'm appealing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he handle you, says the Midrash, says the Gemara. Shortly thereafter, a serpent comes, bites this person, and he dies. Says the Gemara, picking up after that story, Vehai, at the four words before the end of the line over here, 18 lines down, Vehai Bar Nahashu. Was this individual the son of a serpent? No, it doesn't mean the son of a serpent. Bar Nahash means, is he deserving of the punishment from snakes? In other words, we're going to see in just a moment, we're going to understand that certain punishments sometimes are parallel to the sin that was committed. Certainly in the Beit Din, there were specific ones. There were Arba Mitot Beit Din, Sekila, Serifa, Hereg, and Henek. And then after Beit Din time, the Gemara will say, there are specific ways in the natural world that you'll die if you were deserving of that sort of death penalty. Well, this individual, what's he deserving of if he really was the murderer? He's deserving of Hereg. He's deserving of being beheaded. Strangulation. Is the snake death penalty, after we're no longer doing it as human beings to him, appropriate? Is it parallel to Hereg? The statement of the Gemara is it's not so. Well, if he was, again, just piecing it all together, if he is liable for death penalty of Hereg, of being strangulated, well, then how come he's being put to death by Nahash? What would Nahash be parallel? We could say it even outside of the Gemara. Serefa, right? Serefa, because the eris, the poison of the snake, will be injected into the person. It's parallel to the fire which goes into the body and burns them out. And what we're going to see in the Gemara right now. Says the Gemara, V'hai bar nahashu? Is he really deserving? Is that a bar nahash? V'ha'mar of Yosef, v'chen taned v'chizkiyah, miyom shaharav bet hamikdash. Don't we have this well-known statement that from the day the Mikdash was destroyed, even though we no longer have Sanhedrin, even though we no longer can give death penalty, we don't have Beit Din of 23, we never lost the ability to have four mitot Beit Din. Says the Gemara, lo batelu v'ha batelu. What are you talking about? They weren't annulled. They didn't cease to exist. Of course they ceased to exist. We no longer have them. After you no longer have Sanhedrin, you can't have death penalty. Ela din arba mitot lo bitelu, says the Gemara. We didn't mean to say that we in reality as human beings don't put to death. Of course we stop putting to death. Why is it from the day of destruction of the Beit HaMikdash? That's when we lost Sanhedrin. We lost Lishkat HaGazit. Without Sanhedrin, we're no longer in our minds actually putting to death. Asks Tosafot, what's that?
Have a judge at a different city, I'm saying.
No, you can't. You can't. Without Sanhedrin, you can't do so. As Tosafot, even 40 years before the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, we lost Lishkat HaGazit. As a result, we can't put to death either. Says Tosafot, in those 40 years, like Charlie says, we were still putting to death under extenuating circumstances. But generally speaking, we associate the ability to have a Beit Din of 23, to be done b'dinei nefashot, with having Sanhedrin Gedola, which means we have the Beit HaMikdash, which in turn says the Gemara, Miyom Shaharav Beit HaMikdash. The interesting thing is, Rabbi Shimon ben Shatach lived during the time of the Beit HaMikdash. So it's that the statement over here is not exactly, Tosafot points this out, is not exactly contextually sensitive. In other words, if he lived Bizman Shebet HaMikdash Kayam, technically speaking, he couldn't. It means that, well, from the time you don't have the Beit HaMikdash and you're no longer putting to death at all, so all you have is Din Arba Mitot Beit Din. During the time of the Beit HaMikdash, we could be putting to death in the high court. However, so to speak, God could be doing his thing as well. So over here, Bishimon ben Shatach, it's true, it's Bisman Shebet HaMikdash Kayam. But he wasn't able to put to death. Why wasn't he able to put to death? There were no witnesses. There was no kosher vision of the scene. So he's appealing to God in this circumstance. So says the Gemara, Ela din arba mitod lo batelu. How so? Mishin tayev skila. That means after the time that we no longer are putting to death but in court, a person who's liable for skila, like someone who's mehalel Shabbat with Eidim and so forth, or nofil min hagag, or hayad dorsato. Either he'll fall off a roof or he'll be trampled by an animal. Why falling off? Well, trampled by an animal is easy. That's you throw stones on the person. That's flattening him out, just like the animal is by trampling over him. Why falling off the roof? Rashi quotes from the Mishnah later on, Daf Mem He Amud Bet, that Betza Sikila Hayita Givoha Shete Komot. The place where you would begin the individual who was Hayav Mita Biskila was two stories up. You'd then push the guy off. That's similar to falling off the roof, continues the statement. Mishin tayev serefa, a person who's supposed to be burnt to death. Or nofel midleka, either he'll fall into a fiery furnace, fire of some sort. Or nahash makisho, there's our circumstance, right? Serefa would be the serpent, the snake biting him. Again, back to our individual, is the snake biting him, but he's liable to herig, not to serefa. Mishin itayev hariga, o nimsan lemalchut, o listin bayina alav. A person who is liable, as our individual in this story is, to herig, to being killed by Beit Din with the sword killing, with strangulation of some sort. We'll find out exactly how they used to do it in the Mishnah later on. Well, what would happen to him? Either he'd be handed over to the malchut, to the kingship, to the monarchy of the time, says Rashi, and generally speaking, how would they execute people? Off with their head, guillotine, with a beheading. Or listin ba'in alav, or there would be bandits who would attack him and kill him. How do bandits, back in the day, today they'd probably do it with a gun. Back in the day, how would they do it? With a knife, right? With herik, with a sword. Mishin tayev henek, lastly, there's your question, A.B. What about a person who's liable for strangulation? O tovea binahar, either he'll die of suffocation because he's underwater, he'll drown. O met bisronchi, sronchi is asphyxiation. Is that how they translate it? They've got to, right? It's choking. Okay, that's easier, cleaner English, right? Choking, it means a person's not able to breathe easily. So basically, back in the Gemara, in our context, what the Gemara just did was ask the following question. It said, in the story of Rabbi Shimon ben Shatach, this guy who seems to be clearly 99.9%, we are certain he's the murderer, but we can't put him to death, even Bizman Shebet HaMikdash Kayam. So as the Gemara, Rabbi Shimon ben Shatach asks God, he appeals to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you handle the situation. He dies by a serpent biting him. Says the Gemara, but that doesn't make sense. That's not what's supposed to happen. Even if God is directly involved or indirectly involved in this circumstance, the guy should have either been handed over to the monarchy in some way, they should have caught him for something and executed him, or listim bayin alav, or bandits should have attacked him. Says the Gemara, Amre, hahu het ahariti havabe. It must be that that individual not only had the sin of murder, he must have done something else that was bad. And as a result, he was liable, as Sammy says, to serefa. He must have done something else. He was liable to serefa. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, involving himself in this circumstance, it's not going to give him a double death. What do we do in Beit Din in this world? De'amar mor mishin tayev shete mitot Beit Din nidon behamir hamura. Any person who's liable to two punishments from Beit Din, you get the more severe one. When we deal with serefa or herig, the more severe one is serefa. As a result, this individual, Kadosh Baruch Hu, is getting involved to judge him, to deal with him in this world. From up there, which one of the two death penalties which he's liable for is he going to get? The more hamur one, the more severe one. What's the more severe one? Serefa nahash makisho.
Why are we not saying that Hashem didn't want to punish this guy? He controlled that part of the situation. And that's why he's not getting the invited. Hashem's doing the thing, we couldn't do it, so now Hashem do it, and you do it. We're telling you how we think you should be doing it. Hashem's saying, no, I didn't want him to die that way.
It's
a
nice matter of assumptions also.
Certainly. Well, furthermore, in other words, why? Yeah. You're right. Why are we assuming this? Why? The Gemara is working with a set of assumptions that the out-of-the-norm deaths, not always, but oftentimes or sometimes, are commensurate to the action which was committed before him. As a result, that's their vision. The vision is it wouldn't heck it be like this. But you're both right, Joey and Jeffrey, in the following claim. I mentioned it to Jared after the class yesterday. Hatam Sofer be Moshe Sofer, maybe 200 plus years ago. He was asked the following question. There was an individual who died from one of these out-of-the-norm circumstances. Bandits attacked him and killed him in a tragic fashion. The Hevrav, I assume Pressburg, where he lived, turned to Rabbi, to Hatam Sofer be Moshe Sofer, and they said, do we bury him amongst Am Yisrael? Do we bury him in a regular Jewish cemetery? Maybe we shouldn't allow him in. So what are you talking about? Why wouldn't you allow him in? This out of the norm death. It must be that he was a murderer and we just never knew about it. And this was God playing his role. Says Rabbi Moshe Sofer, says Hatam Sofer. It's in his Teshubot, if I'm not mistaken. He says, absolutely not. He says, you still bury him in a Jewish cemetery. He says, well, what are you talking about? He says, listen, the statement over here is that it'll take place on occasion, in circumstance, that if the person was liable, that God will handle them in that fashion. That doesn't mean the opposite direction is always true as well, that any time someone died by a snake bite, it's because they were liable from Serefa. I mean, if that were the case, every out-of-the-norm circumstance, every strange death, we would never be burying them in Jewish cemeteries. We'd always assume it's because they had some sin and God was extracting, doing judgment to them in this way, in this situation. That was his claim. The truth is, if I'm not mistaken, they bring proof from Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says, pretty much under all circumstances, even when the person drowned, someone eat this. Wow, all the strange circumstances. You bury him amongst Am Yisrael, you bury him in a regular Jewish cemetery because we can't play this role. So the Gemara does want to work with this sort of assumption, specifically in the context of Rabbi Shimon ben Shattach, who prayed for the death of the individual. Ultimately speaking, of course, we're left. We can't prove this. I mean, it's an assumption which leads to another assumption of an answer. The assumption is he must have died because of the prayer or the statement, the request of Rabbi Shimon ben Shattach, and in turn he must have died in the way that we have tradition he would have died in, and as a result we have to stretch ourselves to give this answer. It's certainly a lot of assumptions. Okay, so it goes in the Gemara. Continues the Gemara, Me'omed v'chule. If you recall, the Mishnah said that in the context of dinei nefashot, in a situation of life and death circumstance, when the edim come in, me'ayimin alehim, we threaten them, we intimidate them. And one of the things we say to them, the first thing we say to them is make sure that this isn't based on me'omid, based on evaluation, approximation. That's how we got into that story in the past. Now the Gemara contrasts our Mishnah here on Daf Lamed Zayin to the Mishnah Daf Kaftet. The Mishnah Daf Kaftet talked about what we say to dinei mamonot edim, a witness who comes in for a monetary circumstance. We don't start off and say, are you certain you actually saw this? Are you certain this wasn't Me'omed? We don't say that to the witnesses who come in to testify about a monetary case. Why not? It seems clear, it seems to be apparent, says the Gemara, that that's a distinction. That's a difference between Dinei Nefashot and Dinei Mamonot. Dinei Mamonot, perhaps Me'omed would be sufficient, right? In other words, I'm not 100% certain. I'm not, I'm 99.9%. I'm quite certain. In the type of story of Rabbi Shimon ben Shattach, we'll find the parallel. In monetary disputes, the witnesses would be kosher. In Dinei Nefashot, in life and death, the witnesses would not be kosher. That seems to be the deduction. Why does our Mishnah and Daf Lamed Zayin say when the witnesses come in for dinei nefashot, we remind them no me'omed, but for dinei mamonot we don't? Maybe the reason is because me'omed is okay in dinei mamonot. Says the Gemara, b'dinei nefashot hi hu de la amdinan, habdinei mamonot amdinan. Says the Gemara, it appears as if in dinei nefashot specifically and only do we not omid, are we with an aleph, are we not evaluative, are we not approximating what took place? By means of contrast, in Dinei Mamonot, Mishnah Daf Kaftet seems to be telling us, it's okay, Keman, whose opinion would this be following then? Kirbi Aha. It's the singular opinion of Rabbi Aha. Who's Rabbi Aha? Ditanya, as the Beraita tells us, Rabbi Aha Omer, Gamal Ha'oher Ben HaGemalim, V'nimsa Gamal Harug Besido, B'yadua Sheze Harago. Circumstances as follows. Gamal Ha'oher. Rashi suggests that Gamal Ha'oher is a situation where a camel is having relations, maybe in a backward fashion. Okay. Now,
Mating.
Better. They don't have relationship. You're right. As the camel is mating, either for one of, I guess, many reasons, they don't want anyone present. They don't want other gimalim present, and they don't want anything. So they're either going to be, for just in their wildness, kicking around, or alternatively, for their privacy, I don't know, innately, they're going to kick anyone who comes in their way, irrespective of that. Apparently what would take place, or does take place, as camels are mating, is they're very wild to anything that's in their close vicinity. Okay, Gamal ha'ohed ben ha'gimalim, so there is the camel, and we know that it just mated, and we walk over after the mating, v'nimsa gamal harug besido, there's another camel lying next to it, dead. I don't know, who killed that camel? Well, the assumption clearly is we know when a camel mates, it gets very wild, and anything in its close proximity and its vicinity is going to be kicked in the face or in the stomach or in the heart. Biyadua, we can, with full certainty, testify and know shezeh harago, that it was the mating camel which killed that dead camel next to it. That's a good approximation case. That's an evaluation. We don't actually know. We didn't actually see it. It's like our case of Bishimon ben Shatach, the individual. The difference only is between a human being holding it and a camel. If anything, the camel case is more far-fetched because the individual has the blood on his knife. And there's the individual in front of him, the second individual, and he's twitching from death. It just happened. Over here, all it is a camel that just made it and a camel next to it. Says it'll be aha, what's the halal? The camel who just made it killed that other one. Well, that's a pretty good proof that we have a distinction. What's that? Dine mamonot. That's the point. That's the point. In dine mamonot, where it's monetary damage, will make the person who owns that camel liable for the dead camel. That's right. But you didn't see it, did you? You didn't see it. It's good enough. The conjecture is enough. So, okay, that's the statement. Says the Gemara, it appears as if our Mishnayot are a great proof. It would be aha. The Biyaha distinguished. The Biyaha said, Dine nefashot, no omid. Dine mamonot, omid is okay. Says the Gemara, if that's the case, so we have a singular minority opinion who runs our Mishnayot, not so settling. We generally speaking want our Mishnayot to follow the majority opinion. Anytime the Gemara has that sort of statement, should we suggest our Mishnah is Rabbi Aha? Yeah, why not? Rabbi Acha has one opinion. We want the majority opinion. We want the opinion of Chachamim to be reflected in our Mishnah. Says the Gemara, so I'll push you back and I'll tell you you're not fully certain about this. It goes like this. You see, our Mishnayot, again, our Mishnah over here on Daf Lamed Zayin, the Mishnah 8 pages ago on Daf Kaf Tet, were different in several ways. One we just mentioned, by Dinei Fashot, by life and death situation, we said that your first thing you ask them is, are you sure you actually saw this or was it Me'omid? But one of the next things we ask them by Dinei Nefashot is, did you actually see it or did you hear it from someone else? You remember that from the Mishnah? The Mishnah said, did you hear it? Called Eid Mipi Eid. When you go back to the Mishnah in Daf Kaftet, Dinei Mamonot, it doesn't mention that either. It doesn't mention that when the individual comes in, individuals, these witnesses come in to testify about a monetary situation, we don't say to them, did you actually see it or did you hear it from someone else? That's not what we say to them. We just make sure they're telling the truth. We don't ask them that question. And yet, and here's the key line, in Dinei Mamonot, the halacha is that Eid Mipi Eid is not kosher. So clearly the words that we say to the witnesses when they come in are not going to determine what's kosher or not. Do you follow? In other words, you can walk into my classroom and I have specific rules and I've stated all the rules on a piece of paper and I give it to you. Is that stating of rules, is it bar none? Everything is in there? Or am I giving you the basic structure and guidelines? But there are other laws that apply. The suggestion of the Gemara initially was the fact that we say to these witnesses initially, in Dinei Nefashot, make sure this wasn't Me'omed, whereas we don't in Dinei Mamonot. Clearly Dinei Mamonot, Me'omed is kosher. The response is it's not so. We just give a list of certain things. In Dinei Nefashot, we go out of our way to remind them this is a very severe circumstance. It's finals time. The principal gets on the loudspeaker, make sure you don't cheat, effectively. A 3-minute talk from my father, don't cheat. Does that mean throughout the year you could cheat on your test if your teacher hasn't told you? Of course you can't, but in that circumstance, less severe, we won't remind you in that situation. The Gemara now proves from the fact that Eid Mipi Eid, hearing it from another witness, which we know in Dinei Mamonot is not kosher, but we don't remind the witnesses of that, clearly the words to the witnesses can't be proof for what's kosher in testimony or not. Says the Gemara, uleta'amich. And according to your logic, that you're paying attention to the way that the judges intimidate the witnesses when they come in, ed mi pi'ed de katane b'dine nefashot u de la amrinan ha b'dine mamonot amrinan. Do you mean to tell me that our Mishnah daf lamed zayin told us that we turn to the witnesses in dine nefashot and we tell them it can't be ed mi pi'ed? Only in dine nefashot? In the Mamonot kosher, it's not true. Vehatinan, the Mishnah and Daf Kafte told us it's not so. Imamar, who amarli shani hayavlo ishpeloni amarli shu hayavlo lo amar kelum. We learned 8 pages ago that the halacha is if the witness says, "Listen, you want to know how I know this? He told me." Or the other guy told me, not kosher. Until you say, I heard Sammy tell Joey, I owe you 200 zoos. Well, clearly, is not kosher. So what's the answer? So why does our Mishnah mention it and the Mishnah over there doesn't mention it? Okay, when I give the test, I don't remind them they can't cheat. And during finals time, they're reminded that they can't cheat. When I give the test, I don't remind them they have to put their cell phone on the desk. That's... Or it's less severe, so we're not going to go out of our way to give you the exhaustive list of rules. It's a known fact in general. When it comes to dinei nefashot, we'll go out of our way. It's the speech during finals time in the school. When it's dinei mamonot, it's true. We're going to make sure that when you testify, you'll be truthful and you saw it and you heard it, all that sort of business. But we're not going to remind you at the onset.
Why not?
When I give a test, I don't remind everyone that they can't cheat. Heke, that's the way it works. I don't need to go through the exhaustive list. It's the system. Alma, it's clear, says the Gemara, Afal gav de psile b'dinei mamonot, even though edim, who are ed mi pi ed, and by extension, me'omed, are psile, they're invalid b'dinei mamonot in financial circumstances. Amrinan lehu b'dinei nefashot. We say it to them, specifically in dinei nefashot. It's more severe. We give them the whole list. We read them the right act.
If it doesn't say it by dinei mamonot, then it's obvious that it's MVP is not good, then I don't have to say it in dinei nefashot.
Again, you might be right in terms of listing the law. Over here, we're talking about saying it to the witnesses. And I'm going to make it kal vachomer. Witnesses, we want to intimidate more in dinei nefashot than in dinei mamonot. Saving lives, making certain what we're...
Do they get a punishment?
Yeah.
Really didn't hear. I heard that he owes him money from Jackie, let's say.
Yeah.
All right, now, he's lying. He didn't hear it from the witness.
Yeah.
Do you punish that ed that's trying to make...
Lo ta'ane bere'acha ed shaker. Oh, the ed who told you? No, he didn't walk into... Midevar sheker tehak, that's all. Yeah, of course. Well, he said I heard it from the other guy. No, he's not an Edzo, man. Stand there. He says I heard it from the other guy, or he's saying I heard it on my own?
He said I heard it from the other guy.
I would just say, get out of here.
Walk out
of the car. That's all. No punishment for that. Anyway, Alma, it's clear. So too over here in the case of Me'omid. Even though it happens to be invalid for Dinei Mamonot. You're not allowed to cheat on my test during the year. But I don't remind you it. Amrinan lehu b'dinei nefashot. During finals time, I tell you, more severe circumstance in nefashot. I read you the entire riot act. Okay, that's the conclusion of the Gemara. We can't prove from our Mishnah that it follows Rabbi Aha that in dinei mamonot me'omed is kosher. And as a result, Rabbi Aha's one opinion. Our Mishnah very, very possibly disagrees. Okay, continues the Gemara, Hevu Yode'im Vechule. If you recall, the continuation of the Mishnah is part of our intimidation. We say to them, if you're going to put this guy to death, and he's not liable to death, you're not only killing him, you're killing all of his descendants after him. And we proved it from the Pasuk, Kol Deme Achicha So'akim Elai, right? The Pasuk says, by Cain, your brother Hevel, his bloods are crying out to me from the ground. It's in plural, bloods. It's not only his blood, it's his descendants' bloods as well. Then the Mishnah told us, there's another derasha on that. The other derasha on that is that the blood was splattered everywhere, that the blood was all over the place. It seemed as if it was so many people's bloods, or it was just so much blood. The Gemara will, for just a moment or two, give us the gory details of that. Amar of Yehuda bered Rebihya melamed. We can derive from this she'asa kain behevel achiv haburot haburot pesiot pesiot. Cain, to Hevel, gave him many wounds and many many gashes. He really beat him up in a very strong and vicious fashion. Why so? Just out of hatred? No. Shelo haya yodea mehechan neshama yosea. He didn't know. Where is the soul? Where is the life force situated? They're the first human beings, according to the Torah's narrative. As a result, says Cain, I don't know how to kill him. So he starts whacking him in his arm. Nothing happens, but he pulls blood out of there, and then in his legs, and all over the place, whatever. And so there's blood all over the place. Until he realizes, or until he finally arrives at the neck, and Cain finally dies. Okay, that's the vision. That's the gory details the Gemara provides for us. From the day on which the Torah describes that the ground opened its mouth to accept the blood, which means to say, it appears, this is the way Tosafot reads the Gemara, the blood was covered by the ground. It's true, even when a person dies or is killed today, the blood will be on the ground. Back then, the way the Torah seems to describe it, the ground opened its mouth, it doesn't have a mouth, but the ground opens up and swallows the blood. From that day onward, we never heard of such a thing of the ground opening and swallowing. Stane, 1 second. Shene Emar. Cites a pasuk to support this. Miknafa aret zemirot shama'anu sevi lasadik. The pasuk in Yeshayahu describes miknafa aret. From the corner of the land, we heard the crying out of praise to God. Why does it say from the corner of the land? Shouldn't it say from the mouth of the land? Anybody who knows Perek Shira knows that everything is singing the praise of God. So if everything's singing the praise of God, you got to imagine that the horses in the field and the hens in the barn and so forth are using their mouth to sing the praise of God. Shouldn't the ground be using its mouth as well? If it has a mouth, the Torah tells us it has a mouth. It's poteach et pia. So why is it mikinah v'aret? It's clearly the ground's mouth now stays closed. Okay, well, that's a pretty decent proof from a derasha. Mikinaf, one second. Mikinaf aretz velo mipi aretz. Etiveh Hizkia achiv. Hizkia, the brother of Rav Yehuda, the son of Rabbi Chaya, turns to him and says, what are you talking about? Katan and Sammy beat him to it. Vatiftach aretz et pia. Pasuk says in Parashat Korach that the mouth of the earth is opened up. Says the ground, it's true, it will open and has opened its mouth for negative, for evil circumstances, to kill Korach v'adato, but it hasn't and won't for positive situations. Asks Tosafot, well, that's interesting, because we have another place. The Pasuk says in Parashat Bishalach, Tivla'emo aretz. The ground swallowed the Egyptians. What's the purpose of swallowing the Egyptians? You have to imagine, says Tosafot, it's for a positive circumstance. Instead of them just drowning in a vicious and painful fashion, the ground swallows them up. Isn't it another place where it lit Toba, the ground opens up and swallows them? They would have drowned. Instead, the ground opens itself up and it saves them of that suffering. Says Tosafot, Toba tamisriim ena kiruya Toba. Okay, we're talking about good for Am Yisrael, not good for the Egyptians. It's true. The Egyptians got something positive, less suffering, according to the understanding of the Pasuk in such a way. But that's not what we're talking about. When the Gemara says the ground for good, the Gemara means for the good of, the Am Yisrael people. It's another Nosach and Tosafot, if I'm not mistaken. Instead of Misrim, it says Goyim.
Why did he deserve this kind of... Why did he deserve to die? Why did he deserve?
That was all right. We got to learn. The Gemara does. Harari talks about it all the time. But I can't this second. No, it's good. Ve'amar of Yehuda bered b'chia galut mechaperet avon mechasa. And says galut, being exiled, will give you a half atonement for sin. Well, what does that mean? First and foremost, what's the proof? Me'ikaraketi v'hayiti na'vanad. Cain, when he's told that he's going to be banished from Gan Eden, he says, I'm going to be na'vanad, I'm going to be a wanderer. But he uses a double word to describe wandering. Na'vanad. Ulbasof ketiv, and then after the pasuk says, he goes out from Gan Eden, vayeshev, be'eres nod. And the word nod, as Rashi explains, the rabbis are understanding as similar to the word nad. So he goes and he settles in Eres nod. What was the punishment? What does he say is going to happen to him? Na'vanad. vanad. It's a double wandering reality. And then he goes and he settles, and there's singular. Just not, it appears as if he didn't have the full severity, or he was atoned for some of the severity of that punishment, of that difficult circumstance that was laid upon him because of Galut. What else happens, say the rabbis? He goes out and he goes to Eretz Nod. Clearly, from Galut, he gets Kapara. What sort of concept is that? The Gemara will elaborate in a second on how Galut, exile, sometimes gives atonement. Why does exile give atonement? There used to be yeshiva in Israel. Some of the Flatbush boys used to go. They don't go any longer to this place for one reason or another. If the kids would misbehave, they'd get galus. They would send them out. I don't know. I guess you can't do it any. I don't. Maybe they don't do that anymore in the yeshiva. We don't. For one reason or another, maybe I know the reason. Maybe parents don't want their child getting galus. But anyway, they would send them up north or down south, or something like that. What was the idea? Well, of course, you know, let them learn a lesson. But what sort of lesson do you get from being exiled if you don't have, assuming you don't have contact with other people? Well, you have to introspect. When you're not able to turn to people, to comfortable surroundings, it's sarat. It's a person who's minudeh, what's nidui? How do we call it? Excommunicated. Hayrim. It's all the same idea. The idea is that I became too comfortable in my situation. And now the vulnerability of now being exposed to elements of life which I'm not familiar with and I'm not comfortable makes me introspect and think a little bit harder and deeper about who I am, about where I was going, about what I want to be, about what I actually am. Cain, the interesting thing is, the question is whether he actually learns his lesson or not, because what does he do right there in Eretz Nod? Vayhi boneh ir, he builds a city and he names the city after his son Hanoch. He has a child, which is very nice. Having a child is an act of vulnerability. Right? Instead of saying that I'm going to do this all myself, you say I'm going to have to pass this on to a second generation. You say I'm going to have to take care of that. All that sort of stuff is very beautiful. But then he builds a city. A city is a source of comfort, is it not? A city means I'm self-sustained. A city means now I'm able to live a comfortable life. I don't need to live in the countryside where I'm uncertain what's going to happen and where my provisions are going to come from and so forth. Okay, but that's the general description. The Gemara in Masechet Rosh Hashanah Daf Tet Zayin, if I'm not mistaken, over there, talks about ways of doing teshubah. There are several ways. One is changing your name. Now, these are darkei ha-teshubah. Rambam describes it in Perek Bet. Rambam calls it darkei ha-teshubah. It's not necessary for teshubah. I try to do teshubah. I've never changed my name. But the Gemara says that's one way. What does it mean? Kilomar eni oto adam. I'm not the same person. So it's demonstrating. It's a symbol. I'm a different person. Where do they learn it from? From Abraham. His name is changed from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Teshubah. Interesting, right? And then the Gemara, well, at least appropriate way. It's in the Gemara says, well, Galut, how do you know? Lech lecha, me'arsecha, moladcha, mbet avicha. That was the claim. That is the statement. That's the command to Abraham. That's who we are. We're wandering individuals or nation of wanderers for that reason. We're constantly looking, searching for ourselves. We're living a life of teshubah by constantly moving and searching and developing. Well, as a result, we are bettering ourselves. That's the Galut over here. Amar of Yehuda, Galut mechaperet shelosha devarim. Galut has a way of atoning for three separate things. Rashi tells us already, but the Pasuk will really tell us, it's Herev, Ra'av, and Dever. What's Herev, Ra'av, and Dever? Herev means a sword, you know, a danger or death by sword. Ra'av means famine. And Dever, of course, means pestilence, is wild animals. How are you able to prove this? Well, two separate Pesukim in Sefer Yirmiyahu. First one Pasuk says, Ko amar Adonai kitvu ta isha ze ariri gever lo yitzach beyamav ki lo yitzach mezaro ish yoshev al kise David umoshel od bihuda. It's pasuk in the context of Yechonia, king, and the pasuk says he's going to have no success. He's not going to have any children. He's going to have a time. And then the pasuk says, Hayoshev ayir hazot yamut beherev beraav ubedever vahayosev v'nafal el hakastim hasarim alechem yichyev hayeta lo nafsho leshalal. So then the pasuk says that... Then the pasuk says that Hayoshev ba'ir hazot yamut beherev. The pasuk says those who stay in this city will die. Excuse me, not of Yechonia. This is pasuk by Tzidkiyah Melech, right? And so the pasuk says that Hayoshev ba'ir hazot. I read the wrong pasuk. Yamut beherev bra'avu ba'dever. A person who stays situated in this city. How are they going to die? Those three terrible deaths. Hayoseh, a person who leaves the city. V'nafala lakastim asarim alechem v'hayav ha'yitalo nafsho leshalal. If they get galut, if they're thrown out of their city, Well, then they'll merit life. Do you follow? I messed up the pasukim. I read the wrong pasuk. Pasuk says this about Tzidkiyah from Yirmiyah, from Nebuchadnezzar. You want to know what's going to happen? If you stay in this city, you're going to die a terrible death. Yerushalayim. Okay. Right? If you stay here, it's a terrible death. If you're Kish, well, at least you won't have that death. You'll be subservient. Nobody said life was good, but at least he didn't die. That's that. And lastly, Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Galut Mechaperet Al Hakol, and this is the pasuk that I was reading a second ago. Rabbi Yochanan's statement is that Galut, not only as a way of saving from those modes of death, which we mentioned by Tzidkiyah, here's a pasuk by Yechonia, Shene Emar, and that's the pasuk, Kitvu et ha'ish hazeh ariri, gever lo yitzach be'amav, ke lo yitzach mitzaro, ish yoshev al kiseh David, Moshe od bihuda. And the pasuk says, by Yechonia, he's not going to have any descendants who are in Malchut. He's not going to have any descendants who are successful. He's not going to have any live descendants. Ubatar degala. And after he's exiled, ketivu b'nei Yechonia, asir shaltiel b'no. So the pasuk says, and then in Divrei Hayamim, he seems to have two children. How do he have two children? I thought he was exile. Galut had a way of giving him that atonement. In short, Galut is a kapara. I don't want you to try this at home. I don't want you to exile your children or your grandchildren in order to give them kapara. I do want you to try this in your own life when times are rough, and we know this, sometimes secluding yourself, stepping aside, has a way of changing your perspective, changing who you are. For what reason? Not only because you've separated yourself from the chaos which is surrounding you, but furthermore, because you're uncomfortable, because you don't know what to do. There's no one to turn to. There's no one to get support from. There's no phone to look at to distract yourself in an inappropriate way. Galut has a way of grounding us and in turn achieving kapara. Baruch Adonai le'olam. Amen v'amen.